We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dame Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Prize Picks, coming at Monday morning. It's February 26th, and we have the Wolves' first two games out of All-Star break to get to on today's show. Kind of mix them together. On Friday night, the Bucks came to town, and they beat the Wolves 112-107. That game was fueled by a third quarter where the Wolves just kind of stalled out. They lost that quarter 36-13. Otherwise, played pretty well in that game. I'm sure we'll touch on that here. And then on Saturday night, maybe not a pretty win, but it was a win. The Wolves beat the Brooklyn Nets 101-86. I got Wolves beat writer from the Strib, Chris Hine, here with me as we're going to get back into our normal rhythm of the schedule. We were talking about that, Chris.
There was some dust accumulating on my microphone here. Well, it was break out the pledge this morning.
We were we got a little discombobulated with travel and all that stuff. Right. Chris here on Monday. Jason and I are going to go on Tuesday, and then I think Britt and I will go Wednesday. Kyle on Friday might do a guest pod there too. But we're going to get back into our normal rhythm as we hit the hate when people call it the second half of the season after All-Star break.
Final third
of the season. Mm-hmm. Chris, I was not at Target Center for the Nets game on Saturday. Had a wedding. I did watch it yesterday. You were there. You called the game against the Nets a rock fight in your story. It appeared to be that way to me as well. Watching it back, what was that about? I feel like I can sometimes get a better feel from that being at a game rather than watching at home. Was it a back-to-back? Was it about playing without Gobert, who did miss Saturday, played in Friday's game against Milwaukee, rolled his ankle, did not play on Saturday against Brooklyn? Or is this all just kind of a little bit of a post-All-Star break hangover? What are you feeling?
A little bit of everything all rolled into one. Thank you for not being there, by the way. We were able to spread out a little bit on press row the other night. So that was helpful.
Do what I can, you know.
But this was so it's interesting. This was the second time that they faced Brooklyn this year, and both times were on the tail end of a back-to-back. Both times the game was low-scoring. And both times the Wolves kind of had to gut out a win. I think part of it is, as you know, kind of Jace was tweeting about, and this is always his big thing, is like teams that switch all the time against the Wolves tend to defend them pretty well.
Yeah.
And that's what Brooklyn was doing because it slows down the Wolves' rhythm on offense. And especially when it comes to Ant and Carl, they see a mismatch and then they try to be like, oh, well, let me just take this guy one-on-one off the dribble, which is not how the Finch offense is really supposed to operate or how they're supposed to play this style of offense.
Right.
We've seen Rudy be out earlier in the season in that Boston game, and offense played really, really well.
Sure.
In that game, that's usually kind of the conventional thinking is, oh, Rudy's out, so maybe some of the spacing issues that and challenges that he presents being on the floor get rectified when he's not playing. So at least while the defense may go down, the offense may go up. But that didn't happen in this game. And instead, the defense kind of kept it its pace with even with him right. off the floor. And you know, I just think I'm sitting there Saturday, and I'm just thinking kind of big picture thought about the offense, which is this offense, it seems to be so delicate, like in terms of the rhythm at which they have to play at to operate well. And I mean, it's just maybe a flaw of the system is right. that it requires such a rhythm and such everybody being on the same page. Obviously Ant is the main driver of this, but what was the thing that we talked about going into the break, those last four games, starting with kind of like that second half of the Milwaukee game on the road, it was Ant making like quicker decisions,
sure.
you know, being more decisive. And especially, you know, in that Bucks game, in that Clippers game. And I just don't feel like he's really come out of the break the same way that he went into it. Just in terms of his decision making, you could talk about the shot making, and how shots, you know, aren't falling. That's to be expected with Ant when he has a long break. We've seen that a lot in his career when he misses time or has a break or misses a couple games
back to back.
It's like, There are nights you can just tell Ant's just not going to have a good rhythm shooting. But I just didn't think like he's been playing with the same force and decision making that he had going into the break. And maybe it just is going to take him some time to ramp back up to that level after trying to unplug a little bit following All-Star Weekend. So, but that's how I think, not fragile, delicate, I guess, is maybe the better word. The offensive efficiency for this team is, because they just really don't have a lot of things that they go to when things aren't really working well. And right. it just is so predicated on that rhythm that they struggle when it's just not there.
Yeah. It felt a little selective, I think, from Ant mm-hmm. on Friday and Saturday of like, when am I going to, you know, assert myself? Because, you know, in the fourth quarter, he kind of took over, right? Or the second half of the fourth quarter.
He did.
Put the game away. Like, he was the finisher of that game. I think he was 5 for 6 in the fourth quarter. I was actually rewatching that this morning, and there was one possession where it was moved. It was like an Ant Cat kind of get action. It was like back and forth to them, and then the ball found slow-mo under the basket. Remember, he had like that pump fake like five times play and scored it, and it worked. You know, it was like okay, here it is. This is what it looks like when it's not stagnant, selectively choosing that possession to kind of do what you need to do, move the ball with this team. And mm-hmm. and I was thinking about after the Milwaukee game, I wrote down, I was like, I feel like turnovers turn into fear of ball movement for this team.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of like
you
make that turnover. I mean, guys, we've all probably done that. You know,
right?
If you get scared when they steal the ball from you, right? And it that actually taps into the worst tendencies, right? Of this team in particular, the way in which this team needs to just play extremely confidently offensively, like, and not just confident with the shot. They need to have the confidence in the ball movement and in the offense. And when they do, it like you were saying, it was the team that got them into the All-Star break and was one of the best offenses over the final few weeks. And, you know, you leave that for a week and maybe, I don't know if they totally fell back into bad habits, but situationally they did. And mm-hmm. selectively they sort of got out of them. I don't know. I mean, it's, I think part of that is having a 22-year-old as kind of your main force. I also think Rudy, when he does play, harnesses some of that focus a little bit more. And I had that down. We can talk about this. Just like what it looked like playing without Rudy versus, you know, when he does play. There's just that being the vet, being the kind of person that holds people accountable, not just on defense, but offense as well, or offensively can open Ant up just with a good screen. I think when Rudy misses time, there's going to be a little bit more of that volatility of what to expect from this team, because he is helpful to the offense. And then also defensively, he kind of can inspire offense with defense. I thought, though, and you kind of mentioned it too, even playing without Gobert in that game against Brooklyn, it wasn't a bad defensive game. I mean, Brooklyn missed a lot of shots. They're maybe just not a good team. But just watching it, you kind of lost Gobert's like wall at the rim, but you didn't really lose that sort of swarming nature, or at least the swarming style of defense showed up frequently, if not every single possession in that game. But yeah, defensively in this game, what did it look to you? What did it look like to you with Rudy off the floor?
They talked a lot about kind of varying coverages a little bit. So it sounded like they were throwing a lot of different stuff out there. I didn't go back and rewatch the game because, frankly, I don't want to do that to myself. So, you know, they talked a lot about that. I mean, I just thought the effort was there. I think that was the most impressive thing about Saturday night's game from the Wolves' perspective was, despite tired legs, despite, you know, their struggles offensively for three quarters, largely in that game, you know, I thought that the defensive effort never lagged. And I think that's one of the things that you can always pin to with this team is, in the half court, the defensive effort never lags. The defense tends to have problems when the offense has problems.
True.
Because as you saw in the third quarter against the Bucks, it was transition after transition opportunity because the offense stunk. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's one thing that this team, which is prone to inconsistency, has been very consistent about on a night in, night out basis, is the defensive effort is always there in the half court, I should say. Should specify that. So I thought that was very encouraging to be able to do that, even against a bad team without Rudy, like to play that level of defense. They got a bunch of blocks, you know, I thought that was impressive. And everybody seemed to, like, Nas had a few, I think. Carl
Nikhil had that spike one.
Yeah. Like they did a good job of affecting shots. Like I was impressed with the defense, given that Rudy was off the floor on Saturday night. So that was encouraging.
I think an interesting wrinkle to Rudy not playing, and this maybe extends to anyone in the rotation not playing, is it deprives the bench a little bit, right? Maybe specifically scoring-wise, it was not a good scoring game for the bench there. Right? You move Kyle Anderson up into the starting lineup, who you know, hasn't individually been a super efficient player, but he does kind of inspire that ball movement often. He finds a spot to the spaces that he needs to be on the floor. And once you put him into the starting lineup, it kind of changes the way in which the second unit rotation work. And what I put down in my notes is I was like, this is the case for a buyout guy. You know, we've talked about how I don't think there's an every night spot. I don't think they believe, you know, you go get player X and you bring him in and they're in the rotation the next day. But if guys like Gobert and really anyone in the rotation is going to miss a game, it shifts things around, and you could use somebody coming off the bench to, you know, to eat up 12-15 minutes and be able to give you some offensive spark. We could talk about Monte Morris in a little bit. I thought he did some of that, but I just was like, okay, this is where I could see you are the number one seed in the West. Somebody is going to probably want to come play for you, even if you can't offer them an every single night role. They just need a little bit more when Rudy doesn't play. And I think this would kind of show up when anybody does play. It wasn't a good game from the bench in terms of scoring, I thought.
No, I didn't think so. I mean, Nikhil's shot kind of came back down to earth a little bit. I mean, which is to be expected after how red hot he was even through the Milwaukee game. I thought Monte Morris looked good though. Like I thought like he's starting to fit in. He's, you know, I think the shot will come. But I just thought he looked more comfortable and more acclimated to what the Wolves were trying to do in that game than he has in any other game so far this season. He's talked about, Finch has talked about, everybody's talked about how this is gonna be a ramp up process. The goal is to make sure he's, you know, good by April. But I do think that Saturday was an encouraging sign for him, because I just thought it was interesting that, you know, Finch has talked about, you know, oh, we're going to have like basically 48 minutes of Mike Conley playing.
That
now.
Is not happening.
That is not happening. It's not happening. In part because Finch is also playing them together at times too. And he's using.
Check this.
Yeah. What's that? Go ahead. Yeah.
So he's played 45 possessions with him and Conley on the floor together, 79 possessions out there without Conley. So about a third of his minutes have been, that checks out, right? And I didn't really think, and again, this is super small sample size, so let's not overreact to it or anything, but the Morris and Conley together minutes is a net rating of minus 17.8, and Morris out there by himself, Conley on the bench, is plus 25.4. So, I mean, of course, that's going like, that's going to balance out some, but
right.
I mean, you just sitting on Media Row, like, we've talked about this. We're like, man, it doesn't feel like Morris is out there with Conley a lot. It's the first time I looked up the numbers, but it's probably first and foremost noteworthy how often they're sharing the floor together, playing a two-point guard look, more so than it is that the numbers have been bad of that look. But, it is, I don't know, we probably, maybe at practice today or something. Or did anybody ask Finch about playing Morris and Conley together a lot?
We didn't ask specifically about that. See, this is why we need you in the press conferences. Like, we don't think to ask that sort of stuff after a game. He did allude to the fact that he likes the combination.
Yeah.
So he must not have had the net rating stats in front of him at the moment.
And I don't know. Maybe it was just that game that was bad. This is not a big sample.
The other thing, too, is I think to keep in mind, specifically for Saturday's game, was Mike Conley, is 36 years old, playing on a back-to-back, trying to, you know. Right. So maybe there was a little bit of, let's have Mike on the floor, but let's not put so much responsibility on him for a few minutes. You know what I mean? Maybe a little bit of that was happening Saturday night to just give him like almost a little less of a workload.
Yeah, go be in the corner. Don't necessarily bring the ball.
I think maybe there was a little bit of that at play on Saturday night. So it's interesting though, because that was what it was advertised coming in. And that's not quite how it's shaken out so far in terms of the Monte Morris minutes. But we'll see. And, you know, again, as he gets ramped up, I'm sure his usage will and minutes will increase potentially here. So I do wonder, just, you know, we're talking about this 2 weeks from now. What does that look like?
Right. Yeah. And it's a good sign that in a game when you had a main guy out, you needed more from bench guys, and probably the bench guy who gave you the most more than you've been expecting is Monte Morris. And to that end, that's, you know, that's encouraging. It would have been, if it felt like he couldn't take a bigger role and it felt like forced when he was doing it. Now, maybe we're raising some red flags about, you know, is he ready to be back? Like, Monte Morris deserves to be and should be in this rotation kind of regardless of what the role is. They need it. And in theory, right, it's going to get better and better over time. The defensive numbers, again, small sample size, with Mike, without Mike, have been really good from Monte Morris. And maybe that is just a product of the Brooklyn game. I mean, and a lot of credit to this bad offense for Brooklyn goes to Brooklyn too. But, you know, 42% from two, 17% from three. The Nets only took 11 free throws in the whole game as an offensive rating of 86, and I was like, I wonder if there's been a game that's been worse than that a team has shot worse against them. The Portland game, remember, at Target game. Center?
Yeah, that one. Yeah,
and then the Houston one at the beginning.
There's got to be a way to just delete that Portland game from the records. That Portland home game was not an NBA game,
right?
That was a glorified preseason game.
Yes, that's true.
But the free throws, interesting. You bring up the free throws. That was the most physical let them play game I've seen all season.
Right,
like,
for sure,
it didn't matter. They were getting guys were getting fouled out there, and it was not getting called.
Yes.
But I will say this: the Wolves surely did their share of complaining to the point where Ant got another technical.
Yep.
That benefits the Wolves, though. I think they need to shut up when the refs are swallowing the whistle. Because I really think with how they play defense, if the refs are going to let them play, that benefits the Wolves, because then they can get away with stuff on the defensive end of the floor. When the refs are letting them play as they were on Saturday night, the Timberwolves need to be quiet. Mm-hmm. They don't want the referees starting to all of a sudden call all this stuff. Yes, that means you're probably going to get fouled on the offensive end a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, too bad. Because it's actually going to give you an advantage in the end, because you will be able to play defense better and you won't be fouling out Rudy Gobert, Jaden McDaniels. Like, right. You know, those guys are going to be able to stay on the floor for you and get away with some stuff. So when the officiating is as it was, it was driving me nuts a little bit, because it's like, you don't understand. This is an advantage for you. Mm-hmm. Be quiet and just let them officiate how they're going to officiate, because it's going to benefit you more than the other team.
And theoretically, that's what the playoffs.
Yes.
More like, right. Yes. You know, yeah. So that, I mean, and when we think about the playoffs, and if we're listing reasons of which this team could underwhelm, it's the idea that mentally their minds and their focus wanders, as it did in the third quarter against the Bucks on Friday night. Like, yeah, it is honestly one of the biggest things I'm thinking of, like, with my mind on the playoffs, is what is this team's mental relationship with the whistle, you know? And that, and that goes
50%. Yes. We've all seen it.
Let's grab our first break here, and we have a new sponsor. I'm excited to share that our new sponsor is Adriana Lonick, who is a realtor for Coldwell Banker Realty. And when Adriana and I first met to discuss this partnership, it kept making more and more sense to me, because, of course, many of you listeners are at least somewhat considering buying or selling a home, whether you're a first-time home buyer, or you've bought and sold many homes. Adriana wants to help you make your next step the best experience it can be. And we are adding a perk. You mentioned this podcast when you contact Adriana, and you will get a pair of free Timberwolves tickets when you book a consultation with her. Adriana is a Wolves fan and a season ticket holder. And just kind of reading through the reviews of her work, it's clear she's going to provide that quality, trustworthy information that you need when you specifically are stepping into the home buying or selling experience. Working with Adriana makes home buying definitely more accessible. You don't need to know everything about home. I don't know anything about it. And the step to, as somebody who's considering those sort of things in my own life, is to start by asking questions and getting there. And it's hard to know where to begin. And the reality of the situation is it starts with one of these consultations with someone to walk you through it. So if you do, if this is a place where you're at in your life and you want to consider purchasing or selling a home, go to thedancingrealtor.com or call or text Adriana at 715-304-9920 to book a consultation. And again, book one of these consultations, get you some Wolves tickets to do that. Again, her name is Adriana Lonick. I've really enjoyed getting to know her in the process of this. And she works with Coldwell Banker Realty. If you're considering next steps in home ownership and don't know where to begin, again, go to thedancingrealtor.com, as you see on the screen here, to take next steps, or contact her at 715-304-9920. Get the ball rolling on home ownership and score a pair of free Wolves tickets at thedancingrealtor.com.
This podcast might be changing my life, Dane. We have not only do people recognize me more, but now, you know, English muffins become a yes. part of my life. And now I might have a realtor to contact about buying a home. We'll see. How this goes here.
In all, actual seriousness, it's really cool to have local sponsors.
Absolutely, 100%. They have Wolves fans.
That
sponsoring their businesses and things like that. It's very cool to see.
Yeah, it's flattering, and it's, you know, and we have some national sponsors too. We appreciate them, but it's been cool with whether it be the brewery or a few other local restaurants and businesses and a whole array of them. I always say is if you are considering purchasing any of this stuff, help out the pod, but also just kind of help out this Wolves fan community by supporting their different businesses. Again, that's Adriana.
Subscribe to the Star Tribune too.
Right. Another local, not sponsor, but they're part of the squad.
They're part of the show, right? Yes, exactly.
Shout out Glenn. Chris, it's always interesting watching a game afterwards, you know, maybe one or two games a year I'll miss because of a family something. Mm-hmm. And going back to watch it the first time after, you know, you've kind of checked Twitter or whatever, or I've read you guys, and the McDaniels effort thing was pretty prevalent after the game. Jim Pete was calling it out on the broadcast, not really knowing where Jaden's head was at. Just at home, would not have really totally jumped off the screen to me. But he was talking about it. Some people were highlighting some clips. I saw a couple of quotes that came out afterwards. What did you think about the McDaniels effort or lack thereof? I mean, clearly at one point Finch pulled him, as like 3 minutes into the third quarter, went for Nikhil and had Jaden sit down for a little bit. I mean, Jaden came back in, hit a big three at the end of the game, but what was that all about? What stood out to you?
You know, I don't know. We didn't really specifically ask Jaden about that last night. It was more so just kind of, you know, the fourth quarter shots and also kind of what happened in the little brouhaha after, you know, late in the game. But I think, you know, it was a little noticeable when Finch pulls him in the third quarter. Mm-hmm. And Finch, you know, kind of referenced afterwards, like, he's got to get out of this funk that he's been in. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe the fourth quarter, you know, hitting two big threes was the first step in kind of doing that. You know, listen, we know Jaden is prone to frustration. We know that he is prone to letting the emotions of a game get into his head from time to time. And I don't know if it's a cumulative effect of Friday and Saturday, you know, kind of building up. I thought he played, I mean, outside of that, I thought he was playing okay. Like,
right, well, that's what I'm saying.
Like, it didn't quite, it was just, maybe it was just a bad moment for him. You know, I don't want to.
What I put down is it just seemed like he was in a bad mood that night.
Yeah. Then that could, you know, be it.
A human sort of thing that happens. Yeah. And we do that with Ant all the time, and he's 22, and Finch always says there's a lot of different ways for immaturity, you know, to show up. That's kind of like his go-to line. And it's, I think that really is it's like, it's a way to name varying levels of effort. And it's not like, it's not an excuse. This team will be and is clearly better when there is more of that consistency. But part of it, and again, this is going to sound totally like I'm excusing the behavior, whatever this is, not just Jaden last night, but like broadly, when this team and the young players in particular have varying effort, it's like arrogance doesn't have to come with winning, but it often does. You know, that's not just like a Timberwolves thing. You see that around when you become a good team, and this team has deserved to be labeled as such, obviously, like particularly maybe when you're a little bit younger, there's some more of that arrogance that kicks in. That I don't think is the end of the world. I think it's somewhat to be expected from players in their early 20s. And all, what just needs to happen is it just needs to be nipped in the bud when it does happen. And I think the difference we see, what I thought when it's McDaniels versus Edwards, is Edwards isn't often benched for that, for these moments. And he's your best player, you know? And I know that's a frustration some people have with Finch at sometimes. It's like, okay, hold these guys accountable, pull them out of the game. Well, this was an example in which he did do that. He recognized something from Jaden and decided, you know, to pull him out of the game and enforce that in that sort of way. And I think that's just probably part of this. Whatever it is, the varying levels of effort from anybody on the team, doesn't need to be reserved to the young guys. But there should, if there is an arrogance, there needs to be an accountability there too. And it also doesn't need to be some sort of toxic problem. I think it's just something that comes over the course of an 82 game.
One other thing I'll say about Jaden, and I think that goes maybe underappreciated about him and his role on this team, is this team asked him to be its best perimeter defender, to take a lot of very difficult defensive responsibilities on a night in, night out basis. And we've often heard that, you know, he really only gets offense when the offense is flowing, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how he gets shots. Plays don't get called for him, you know, things like that, right? I can imagine it'd be very difficult, as somebody who played basketball once upon a time, where if all you're doing is playing defense and you're not getting any shots, Like that's a little hard. That's a little hard to do. And he wasn't really getting a lot of shots the first two games coming out because the offense has been so out of rhythm. I think that maybe just is a human nature thing where it's like you're busting your butt on defense and then like I'm not going to get any shots on the offensive end of the floor. Like I think maybe there's a little bit of that.
That's me just spitballing.
Mm-hmm. That's not like reporting or anything like that. But I could see how maybe some frustration would build up where you are giving 110% on one end of the floor and you're not getting like rewarded for it in a way on the other end. If that makes sense.
So. I don't know why this just randomly came into my mind. I remember like the Durant, Harden, Westbrook Thunder like 10 years ago. They would always like the first play of the game would be like a post up for Kendrick Perkins or Steven Adams. Yeah. Like they were just because that's not what their job was. Their job was to, you know, to defend the rim, set screens, whatever. And they were not a big part of the offense. You're always like, wait, why did they just run a post up for Kendrick Perkins? The very first, but they did. And that was, I think Billy Donovan, you know, the thought is like engage this person by getting them a touch on offense, whatever, and going the other way. And it's different when Jaden is a wing and it's not like he doesn't get touches. It's not like he's not part of the offense. It's just that it's a slimmer part of the offense there. And I think, I don't know. I understand frustration or wavering, you know, focus if you're basically kind of being asked to be like the NBA equivalent of an offensive lineman, you know, where it's just like, go do this somewhat unrewarding task time and time again. And I to be fair to Jaden, I think he broadly embraces that.
I think he does too, because we know how much he loves playing defense. But it's just natural, especially when you're a starter, like to want to have the ball and show what you can do on that end of the floor
and too. Maybe know that you can't do more than you're doing. And they're not a good offensive team, or they haven't been a good offensive team.
And these last two nights, and it goes hand in hand. It's like, when does Jaden get his offense? It's when the offense is in rhythm and the ball's moving and he's open for threes or he's cutting and getting open lanes, blah, blah, blah. And these last two games, that was not the case at all. So, just an interesting game.
It's just worth
I think it's been an interesting year for Jaden overall. I think he has been more good than bad, or lackadaisical or whatever, just in terms of what they ask him to do on a night in night out basis, because we don't see it. I think we as media or fans, you chart a player's growth by their offensive numbers, generally speaking, right? Like, that's easy to point to. It's like, oh, this guy's shooting better this year. averaging more points. But it's hard to chart the growth of somebody whose main strength is the defensive end of the floor.
Totally. Yeah, so, I think it's
a little tricky when it comes to kind of the Jaden discourse over the full season, because, you could look at his offensive numbers and say they've, plateaued or whatever, stagnated,
but that was the expectation.
It's just very hard for him to take a leap offensively when he's not a prominently featured part of the offense. So
if you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
A prominently featured part of the offense on Saturday was Kat. He kind of, we talked about
the best in the business, those segues.
Yeah, thank you. Ant finished the game, but Camp was kind of the propeller of an overall underwhelming. The Wolves did not have a good offensive game themselves. I liked one sequence from Cat in particular. He got one of those post-ups, which isn't really a post-up because he catches it at like 18, 19 feet. And the double team comes.
Right, remember, right.
It's the one where he traveled, or they called him for a travel. Like he dragged his foot while he was trying to make a skip pass out of it. He was really frustrated in the moment on that play. And the following offensive possession is when he had that big dunk. And he took that frustration out on the rim, you know, and didn't flail on the drive. Kind of got bumped on it, but decided to, rather than like throwing the head back, went and finished at the rim. That should be the expectation in those situations and not the exception. But I found that encouraging from him. And I think it's a broader representation of, I think, a growing confidence Kat has kind of before the break, maybe the month before. And now he's playing. He's not playing perfectly, but he's playing with a greater feel and confidence in his role. And the thing, as again, the topic we're talking about all the time is, how does this team get a little bit better offensively for the rest of the season? And I think one of the answers maybe is just like, it's more Cat and it's more effective Cat, and it's Cat not playing volatile. And I have some more confidence that is coming. And he did step up into that role in a game without Gobert on Saturday night. They probably lose that. They probably lose that game without Carl last night or Saturday night.
I think we say that a lot during the course of a season. It's like, yeah, they probably lose this game if Carl's not playing.
It's a good point.
You know, I think it's something to remember in the trade Carl discussion that takes over from time to time.
Sure.
Because I feel like we sit here maybe once a week or maybe once every It's like, well, they don't win this game probably without Carl's efficient night offensively.
Totally.
I think, and I don't know if this is just his really bad start coloring my judgment here, because the first seven games or whatever it was up to that Celtics game was some of the worst and kind of immature ball we've seen Carl play. He's really turned a corner since then. But I feel like he has gotten at least a little bit better this season at doing the stuff you're talking about, where it's like he hasn't let frustration carry over as much. Mm-hmm. I don't have the offensive foul numbers in front of me, but I feel like it hasn't
been. It's got to be down.
I feel like it hasn't been as big of a problem outside of that first couple of weeks. I think he's done a better job of managing his emotions, managing his body on the offensive end of the floor. Not elbowing people, not hooking people as much. I do feel like he has played a relatively more controlled game for most of the season than I think he has in other years. Mm-hmm. Now, the ultimate test is going to be, will he be able to do that in April? And we've seen that has been an issue at times in the last two playoff series. Can he do that for most of a playoff series is the big question. But I think at least in the regular season, he is showing that he is making some strides in being more under control and not letting it bleed over possession to possession when he gets upset.
I think that's totally true. And I think it's all about framing, right? Mm-hmm. It's it's not that those things aren't happening. He did have a, get called for a hook in the Brooklyn.
He did. He did. He got called for one, but that was it. That was
exactly.
It.
That was, and that's the point is, you know, I'm myself included is it's like, all right, rather than remembering that he did get an offensive foul or a time that he fell over to the basket driving or got a hook is ask myself, well, how frequent was it? You know, was it one, was it two of them over the course of the game? Or was it three possessions in a row that he did it, you know? Mm-hmm. And at that point, okay, like pile on and point to it. This is an issue. But like, I think what we're both getting at is it's not that that stuff has gone away completely.
Right.
It's that the frequency is going down. And when that's happening and you just look at the end product and it's a pretty efficient and effective night, you know, generating offense in multiple different ways on a night when your team, and particularly on Saturday, could not consistently generate offense. And you like, it's not that hard to sort of get a feel for when Ant doesn't have it going, or he's struggling against the switching coverages like you talked about, or against Brooklyn on Friday when he couldn't really figure out how to navigate Lopez being dropped all the way back to the rim. You know, there's just these things that time to time, it takes Ant a while to figure out sometimes what he needs to do in a specific game, specific matchup, specific coverage. And if Carl can kind of be somewhat consistent through that, it allows you an opportunity to be able to do what happened on Saturday and win that game where, Ant didn't play well. And then in the fourth quarter, he did. Started moving the ball again. Uh-huh. Again, had like 12 points or whatever in the fourth quarter and won the game. Carl keeps that. Kyle's corrected me on this a few times. I think this is just right. At the beginning of the season, I talked about how Cat was like the ceiling. He like whatever you get out of Carl unleashes a higher ceiling for this team. And I think what's kind of switched a little bit is Carl has become more of the floor and more of the consistency, and Ant's boomlets are what really drives that ceiling there too. And that's important. And just when we reflect on the value of Carl this season, there's been more of that. And again, wasn't a great game, but he did that against Brooklyn.
He has been the more, I think, steady offensive player overall, and the more efficient player, and the numbers bear that out.
Right.
That's why he was named an all-star this season.
For sure.
So I think that's a good way of putting it is Ant needs the time to figure out how a team is attacking him or planning for him on a given night. And you can even go back before the break. It was like, you know, think about that Clippers game before the All-Star break where it took a halftime to like kind of have him recalibrate his approach. Like, okay, Ant, here's what they're doing to you. You got to play quicker off the catch and go fast because this is how you're going to beat them. Sure enough, he comes out in the second half, and that's exactly what happens. And they blow them out as a result. To your point about the boom ceiling, you know, when Ant gets it figured out or gets a team figured out, then this team can explode.
Yeah.
But as you saw, at least, Carl on a night where nothing else was going right offensively, you look up and Carl's got like, I don't know, 16 points on 8 for 13 or, you know, 7 for 12, whatever it was.
Right.
He gets to the line a little bit and it's just it's at least something you can go to. Because listen, even when the offense is breaking down and there's no ball movement, any possession that ends with Carl taking a three is generally better than a lot of other things that can happen on a given offensive possession. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That's all you get out of a possession. So, you know, I think he deserves the credit for that, for really, you know, and we've talked a lot about it before. It's just embracing this role of who he is on this team and being more of a steady presence and reliable presence on a night in, night out basis than I think he has in recent years of his career. So.
Yeah, because he was that too when he was younger, right? Up and volatile. Yeah. There was that element of it of a and now is not the young star on the team as one of the vet stars on the team. There's an expectation and a need to have that consistency. And I think we probably just don't give that credit enough because we get the one or two or three bad images or bad sequences over the course of the game. I did think that was really encouraging. That one play travel probably wasn't like, maybe it was a slight travel. It didn't have to be called. And rather than losing his head, he actually took it out on the rim and was like, okay, dunk, let's.
And you know what? That is the kind of game where, especially with the officiating, mm-hmm. where we have seen in the playoffs where he starts to lose it a little bit.
Yep.
Where when officials do swallow the whistle and it becomes a more physical game, mm-hmm. he's not getting the calls that he's used to
yeah.
on the offensive end of the floor. That tends to take him out of the game.
No, that's exactly like the possession where he would gets that first bump and he would flail back and get out of it. He didn't do that. Like,
remember when he slammed the table in front of us in the Memphis series after coming out of the game that one time? That's exactly the kind of game in the playoffs that he takes himself out of because mm-hmm. he's so upset that he's not getting to the foul line as much. But again, I think he realizes it a little bit too. And I think the team does, back to my point earlier, referees swallowing the whistle is not a bad thing for this team. It's not a bad thing at all. So just try to put up with it as best you can on the mm-hmm. other end of the floor. Cause it'll pay off in the long run.
That is what should stick. That is a thought that should stick from it. Cause it's true. It's just true. And it's part of the style of play of being a strong defensive team is that's probably, you know, what you want. If you could choose an officiating pattern, you would choose that. That's the last thing I wanted to talk about was just like the defense again, looking like the number one defense. And it has been true all year to say that the Wolves have been the number one defense all season. They have been, right? Like started really strong and have never lost that number one spot. But if you do kind of like, it didn't have the same teeth. It wasn't at that. They have not been the best defense every single month, right? And what I think we're getting back to, because I thought the Milwaukee game and that third quarter overshadowed what was one of the best, like, first halves of defense.
Oh, yeah. No, the first half was great. Yeah.
You know, there's just that teeth is back to the defense, and they look again like they are – playing in the moment like the number one defense, not just the team that in the aggregate has the number one defensive stats for the season. And to me, that is extremely, you know, encouraging. While this offense is still clearly figuring itself out a little bit, mm-hmm. that teeth of the defense and that swarm we were talking about, even without Rudy, plus when you have Rudy at the rim, I mean, it's what that defense inspires offense. It gets them out in transition. It just stagnates, you know, the other team. And I just think the defense is back. I think like the defense is back.
I'm not surprised that with the week off, the defense is back. That's
a good point.
How these two games have played out does not really surprise me at all. The offense fell out of rhythm because they weren't playing on a every other night basis. But the defense with a chance to rest mm-hmm. and refocus does come back strong.
Yep.
Because I feel like with how suffocating they can play, with the amount of effort that they play. Yeah, once you hit kind of January on the schedule, defense might be a little more up and down than you think as the offense starts to click in, right? Now I think this is the time of the season where I think their defense can really shine. They're out of the All-Star break. The finish line is in sight. Mm-hmm. I do expect them now. They've gotten past the quote-unquote dog days of the season. And I really do think they're set up for a very strong defensive finish to this season.
I do too.
I feel like it plays out well for that. And just, I mean, listen, even when the defense was bad, it wasn't terrible. Mm-hmm. Like they always had at least a little bit of a floor there. So I'd be very optimistic about how this team is going to play defense down the stretch. I think it mm-hmm. could be a really good stretch of defensive basketball. You know, you mentioned that they were number one basically from the whole time. They're basically like when Mariah Carey gets a number one song on the Billboard Hot 100, she settles in there and she doesn't leave it for several weeks. So that is the Timberwolves defense season. Consistency. You might have some dips there here and there, but she's always going to be number one at the end of the day.
That is the comp there.
That's why they bring me on the show every Monday.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. It's the The only thing I'm worried about with the defense is the outside factors, which are probably pretty much the offense, right? If you're turning the ball over,
right,
the team's playing in transition. Yeah.
The third quarter of that Milwaukee game is like, if they ever need a reminder about what bad offense can do to them,
yep.
Third quarter Milwaukee game, just put it on a loop to remind them about what can happen when they stink offensively.
I bet you that's what they're doing right now at 11 a.m. on Monday at
practice. I don't think they waited till 11 a.m. just to go over that. I'm sure they did it before the game on Saturday and yeah, their walkthrough.
That's probably
that probably came up first and foremost. But yeah, they need reminders from time to time. And I do think overall this team has done a good job of learning from its mistakes generally on the year. I hearken back to that Atlanta game where everybody wanted to fire Finch after the third game of the season. They blow the big lead, and then it took them a long time before they blew a big lead again in a game. Yeah. I think they've generally done a good job of learning and adjusting as the season has gone along, and that's why they're tied for first in the Western Conference at this point in the season.
Absolutely. They figured out that to get out of those ruts is not about Cat or Ant taking over. It's about doing it as a team. They forget that from time to time. But when they do that, again, like they did against Brooklyn in the fourth quarter, like, yeah, this team has more than enough talent on the offensive side of the ball with that defense to win every single game. I mean, there's so few teams night to night where you're like, if the Wolves bring that defense and some competent offense, there's so few games where I'm going into that being like, I expect the Wolves to lose. I would pick against them. Like, if you can get that, you're picking the Wolves almost every night. Coming up the rest of this week, I wanted to mention, well, we're going to have Jace tomorrow. Chris and I are going to go to practice today, and then Jace and I will probably talk about a little bit tomorrow what comes out of practice. Look forward here to the rest of the week to play the Spurs on Tuesday and the Grizzlies on Wednesday. We have a pair of tickets to give away for the Wednesday game. Again, that's for Patreon subscribers. You just send us a message on Patreon that you are available. Again, this Wednesday Grizzlies game, send us a message there. We'll pick someone at random. We have two lower level tickets for that game. We're excited to get people into the stadium. I know it's a little pricey, getting pricier to go to these. So on Wednesday, hit us up about that. Britt and I will talk. And then Kyle and I later in the week. Chris, do we miss anything?
I think we're good. I mean, listen, that was one of the worst games of the season. We just talked about it for like 49 minutes.
It's so hard. I'm bad at this. Being able to be like, I was sitting down this morning, I'm like, okay, well, I can't get myself to talk about the Milwaukee game as much because it's not the most recent one.
Right, right.
I kept like putting things down, and then I'm like, no, I just watched the Brooklyn game. Like, I'm gonna keep talking about that. We're trying to not do, at least during the regular season, too many weekend shows so we can kind of balance it out. But that is the disadvantage of a Friday night game. Chris and I might struggle to get to that on Monday. But we know what the story was of the Milwaukee game. I mean, it was actually one of the most boring plots to me of the season because it was like awesome, shot themselves in the foot really hard in the third in the exact way they always have. There's no like level of nuance we can get through. They started turning the, they got stagnant, turned the ball over, and I think they were up by 7 at halftime or down by like 16 or 17 at the end of the third. It's just like, we know that, you kind of know that story of, you know, of what happens. They're weirdly predictable. Like, you know,
when this team goes off the rails, it goes off the rails in the same predictable ways. Yes. All the time. It's always the same culprit. And it's never a night where it's like, oh yeah, they played great offense. They shot 66%, but the defense was just not there. That never happens with this team.
Never. We never
have a night like that.
And you know what? It is. There's something to that, and never having lost three games in a row. There's like a weird consistency to this team.
Well, it's defense. I mean, it's defense. Defense provides that floor. That is the one. Because defense is more bankable than making shots is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's the defense that's what this team is. It's who it is. Mm-hmm. And it's why they've been so successful, even when they've had these mercurial offensive moments. Yeah. breaking out my Brit thesaurus here.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. Hopefully for that defense, Rudy Gobert is back sooner than later. Again, Friday in the locker room, he didn't seem too freaked out about the injury. But, you know, you roll your ankle and you play in a game 23 hours later. It's kind of no surprise that they gave him that rest there. But hopefully, you know, Gobert is back on Tuesday. And that consistency of the defense is even more consistent. You know what you're going to get out of them defensively with Gobert back. And he's a big part of the offense too. That game, this team offensively has a totally different feel with Rudy out as well.
How many second chances? They had like 30 second chance points in that game against Milwaukee.
Carl actually had a lot of those.
Carl had a lot of offensive rebounds too.
Becoming a thing.
They both really attack the offensive glass. So if they're going to start, if they're going to clank shots, you need somebody to try to get them back for you.
Yep. No. And they haven't. And that was a pre-All-Star. We talked so much about before the All-Star break of like, oh, the turnovers are down. All of a sudden the offense is up. Part of another ingredient of that is they've been getting more offensive rebounds for the last month, and we're adding all these little, I don't know, potions into the pot, and hopefully leads to an above average offense here the rest of the way. Well, Chris, I appreciate you coming on. You guys are checking out Chris's story, supporting hopefully the Star Tribune at StarTribune.com. Chris is on the road at all of these games and. Giving us the coverage that we wouldn't otherwise have. Grateful for that on the pod, and I think Wolves fans everywhere should be, that we have someone on boots on the ground every night there. So, Chris, appreciate you doing it today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
I'll see you at practice.
See you in about an hour.
All right. Cool. He's Chris Hine. You're reading him at thestartribune.com. You're following him on Twitter at Christopher Hine. I'm Dane at Dane Moore MBA. I will talk to you with Jace about something tomorrow. We will figure that out. Until then, he's Chris. I'm Dane. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like nobody else around, yeah.